This is At The Line. Thank you guys for coming on this Monday night stream. I'm Ty Yeager. That's Noah McGarrah-George on the top left. And on the top right is Nick Yarbrough. Guys, how are we doing tonight on this lovely Monday night that's raining, at least in our area?
Doing pretty good. Sorry, I'm just checking how it looks on my end. It's pretty good. It's not raining over here, but it's relatively close.
Then, of course Noah had cobbler.
It's not really raining over here. Yeah, I'm doing good because I had cobbler, so I'm feeling good. It's not raining over here. I'm talking with y'all, so of course I'm good.
Yeah.
So, we're going to have a lot that we're going to run through tonight. We're going to talk about the two latest coaching news in terms of Will Hardy going to the Celtics, Becky Hammon not getting the job with Portland, and a really weird article write-up that we obviously have a lot to talk about. And then we're just going to talk about some possible rumors, trade scenarios, all the lovely stuff going on around the NBA. There isn't too much new in terms of, like, prospect. Noah, have you heard anything of new prospects that Spurs have worked out or interviewed lately?
No, nothing on that front. No, nothing.
That's what I thought. We've been keeping out. It's been a little bit quiet lately. Again, we're going to probably hear a lot more in terms of stuff of interviews and workouts after the season ends, most likely. And we have under a month after the finals can possibly end with draft at July 29th. Also, make sure to check to resubscribe to at the line here on Twitch and also on YouTube. We're gonna be streaming on both ends. We're gonna have a full I have a name for our draft party, the Fiesta Bros draft party. How's that sound?
Hey, it's kind of like a certain person's podcast with zero episodes.
Hey, I think at this rate, we all have our own individual podcast. Noah has Alamo City Limits. Did I do that right?
Yeah, no, you got it.
Oh, no, we lost Noah. Did you unplug your mic? No? You unplugged your microphone, man.
Did I? It's still going. It still shows I'm talking.
I can't hear you. You're very quiet.
Nick, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine.
Keep talking.
Oof.
There we go.
Yeah, okay. I don't know why you can't hear me.
All right, now I get. Okay. Like, you were awesome. Very quiet. I got it. We got it now. I don't know what was on my end. Yeah, so also chat, if you have any questions for us, we will be happy to answer unless we've already talked about them. We're not going to. If you ask us a question about a certain player, something like that, we might not go too in depth because we probably talked about it. Make sure to check out the podcast episode that we did of our condensed stream from Saturday, where we talked a lot more draft prospects and all that. And if you want even more of that, we have a 2-full-hour stream on YouTube and also here on Twitch. So if you guys wanted to see back of any of our old stuff, make sure to check that out. But first, let's get in with the real news that has happened lately. Late last night, it was reported that Will Hardy, a assistant coach for the San Antonio Spurs, who's also been with the organization for like 10 seasons now, is going to be joining Amin Udoka's coaching staff in Boston as an assistant coach for the Boston Celtics. It might not seem too big, but Will Hardy has kind of been like one of the youngest coach prospects lately that's kind of been a hit. We've heard a lot of rumors of a lot of people saying that Will Hardy could have possibly
Pop's successor.
There we go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We'd heard that, and he came up as like a video coordinator, stuff like that. Kind of remind me of a bit of Eric Spoelstra, a little bit. But he's going to Boston. Noah, what do you think about the move for Will Hardy?
I think it's good for him. I mean, he's from that Massachusetts area, so I'm sure he's happy to go home. He's familiar with Ime Udoka. They were on the staff together for a long time, so good for him. It's sad to see him go, but you know, I'm sure it's good for his career. It's good for his home life, his family life, whatever. So, you know, happy for him.
Yeah.
Nick, what do you think?
I mean, like, I'm happy for him, and it sucks to see him go. I never really saw him as Pop's successor. I guess, you know, people want to say he was with the team so long. It's like if he's been with the team a long time, then Becky must be ancient, because she has been with the Spurs and in the Spurs system for so long. You know, from playing in San Antonio to joining this coaching staff, I don't know. A lot of people spouted it as like kind of like, oh, it's an Armageddon. Like, we lost Will. And I'm like, I saw more people upset about losing Will than the prospect of ever losing Becky. And I'm like, I just, it sucks to see him go. He's a great, apparently he's a pretty great assistant. But I don't see him as some like titan mind of basketball right now that some people have been portraying him as, and us losing an integral part of our future. I could be wrong. He could turn out as some like Spoelstra, you know, like pre this year Brad Stevens. I don't know. I mean, it sucks, but I'm not too up in arms about it. I mean, yeah, it is what it is, I guess, right? Like, it's kind of like losing Udoka. Like, okay, that sucks. Sorry. I mean, I'm glad you're having a good career. Sorry. I'm sure that, you know, we have a couple great guys in the summer league coaching staff. So I think you brought up, and I was kind of looking into it, like, Brett Brown could be a good assistant coach replacement. I mean, we have, there's options. And there's options that honestly probably have more experience than Hardy. And Hardy's proven to be at least a decent assistant coach. But, like, he hasn't, like, I don't know. He hasn't proven a whole lot. And given he hasn't had a whole lot of time to prove, he hasn't had a whole lot of spotlight. But I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's being a bit overblown by some people in general. Not saying that I won't miss him, but just a little overblown maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, it felt to me like some people, it kind of was a mix of people were overblowing the prospects of Becky possibly leaving, signing somewhere else, and then now they are kind of overblowing with the prospect of Will Hardy leaving. And it's nothing new. This is not new for Spurs in any way. And this also happens across the league where assistants get that big league job essentially. And
yeah,
it's nothing new. So it's something that you shouldn't really be putting a lot of dire energy into if that's the case. But Will Hardy, he looks good. I think he's gonna have with the Udoka that his coaching improved even further once he grew up with the San Antonio assistant bench and then went somewhere else and learned another system. So it's probably gonna be the best for Will Hardy's career in terms of just becoming an even better coach in multiple systems across the league. So it's gonna be promising for him. It's just another pop coach into the system, and I think that's even better. Just you're going to see Pop's influence across this league for a long time, even after he retires.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of a symptom that you see a lot. You see it with some people with DeMar. You see it with some weird people with Rudy talking about, you know, I'm talking about with his defensive plus minus or whatever. Like, you see people in San Antonio, since we don't have a whole lot of high-end talent, you know, we don't have a whole lot of spotlight, we grow attached to our players and our staff, and even if, like, to the point of way overvaluing them. And it's funny how some people say, well, you know, the front office overvalues our assets for trading. It's like, I mean, y'all are overvaluing our front office. You're overvaluing most of our coaching staff. Not all of it, but, like, I think it's a San Antonio fan trait to just be overly attached and not liking to, like, you hate to give up anybody. And it happened with Messina, it happened with Udoka, it's happening with Hardy, it'll happen with Becky if she leaves. Like, we're still fine. And honestly, with everyone leaving, you don't really see the coaching, like, the game plan and the scheming change that much, even with the talent changing. So you obviously don't really see their impact as coaches in the field of play. Maybe it's in the locker room, maybe it's on the bench, but it's kind of like, I mean, they're not out there like coaching like an assistant coach normally would. It seems more kind of like one-on-one player coaching that you don't really get in the spotlight. And I don't think we'll see that big of a difference if Pop comes back and Hardy's gone. I just don't think we'll see anything that crazy in the game plan. Now, record-wise, you know, that's to be seen. But that'll be because of us only having 9 people in the contract right now and our team makeup looking completely different after this season. So, I don't know. If we have a bad season because we lose a lot of talent, whether it's good or bad for us, I'm sure a lot of people, probably a couple months from now, will be seeing the, if only we had kept Hardy. Like, I wait for those tweets. If only we had kept Hardy. He was holding this team together. He was the glue guy. He was the glue guy to this. And I can't wait.
Honestly, that does sound kind of like a Spurs fan thing. I know you have any last words on this.
No, I mean, honestly, I don't, like, in the nicest way I can say it, I don't really care. Like, I don't care if he's here or not, or, you know, I'm happy for him. I'm happy. I mean, it's normal. Coaches move on. They get hired. They flip from bench to bench. They're trying to become head coaches. That's the end game. So who cares if someone's gone? You know, it'd be sad if it was Becky. Maybe a little more sad if it was Becky, because I think so many people, including myself, are invested in her becoming the successor for Pop. But no, I mean, no fan should care if an assistant leaves. They're just an assistant.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it's, I think, the even better thing, at least in terms of this, between the Chauncey Billups sign in Portland and Will Hardy leaving, it kind of sets, it just kind of, it lays the doormat for Becky Hammon to take over at some point. Whether it be maybe this offseason, we don't know yet. I have a theory that Pop might retire after the Olympics, if that's going to ever happen this offseason. Or if it happens next season, next off season, whenever Pop finally gets the record, does one last season in San Antonio and goes out that way. So, I think no matter what, Becky Hammon is most likely going to be the predecessor, and it's going to either happen this off season or next off season, depending on how this goes.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like the consensus. I would feel right is like it will be one of those things. I don't think any of us see Pop staying after. As like, I don't see him staying past this upcoming season. Like, if he were to stay, I don't see him re-upping again or anything. And this is the last year on his contract, right? This upcoming season?
Believe
yeah.
so.
Yeah, it's the last year on his contract, and he's already, as of last season, the oldest coach to ever coach in the NBA. So, I mean, his time is, like, his days are numbered in the NBA. Not because he's, like, washed, but he's old. I mean, like, he can't do this forever.
I think, like, I mean, he's gone through so much recently, especially with his wife in the last couple seasons, you know, dealing with that. And then after that, entering into a weird COVID season where it obviously took a toll on players and coaches alike. Losing out on the playoffs, having to try and navigate just this whole new kind of like culture shock with all these young players, just trying to make the best of it. I feel like it's probably worn him down. And I don't really blame him. You can see it in his interviews, especially. He still has his little jovial moments, but he's kind of been a bit more of that, like, kind of biting, like Pop that people criticize him for. He's a little bit shorter in him. I don't know if he's just frustrated with it or done with it, but you can kind of tell that stuff has been wearing on him a little bit more than in the past. And I mean, that just comes with age, that comes with the stuff he's been through. And yeah, I agree. He's so old. I don't like the word old, but he's getting up there. And you know, I wouldn't blame him for hanging it up after the Olympics. And I feel like that's probably what should happen. But if he wants to stay and get the record, I'm totally fine with that. He's earned way more than just staying for the record. So I'm fine with whatever happens. Ty?
Is Ty gone?
My mic,
I can't hear
there we go.
Either.
My mic decided to mute itself, and I don't know why.
Sure.
Wow. Are you going to do that to me?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think if he is going to retire, it's going to be after the Olympics. He's going to get a gold medal and call it quits after that.
Yeah.
It's like it'd be weird to say that you're retiring and then go to the Olympics and continue to coach. It'd be a little weird. So I think the after the Olympics, if he is going to retire this offseason, that's when it's going to be it. But let's go ahead and move on to probably the biggest shit on Spurs Twitter to start the week. It was so Chauncey Billups got signed as the Blazers head coach after being an assistant coach for one season with the Clippers. And this was surprising.
Yeah, this is the first time he's beaten a woman. This time it was just in a competition. So,
ooh.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Yikes.
I'm telling you, dude, like, it bugs me seeing all this stuff about Chauncey. And I know it's harsh to say, but, like, I've been seeing so many congratulatory posts and seeing like how this is so good for the league, and it's just, I saw especially not especially like they were against it, Tom Petrini and Jackson Frank, looking at their comment sections about their distaste about the hiring just makes me lose a little bit of faith in humanity as a basketball fan. It's just, it sucks seeing, and I have more animosity towards him, especially because it led into this article.
Yeah, it's was such a weird situation, in knowing that Becky Hammon was probably one of the first female coaches to get so deep into a head coach hiring process. We saw that. And then suddenly there was this article that came out by Bleacher Report. Fisher for Bleacher Report. And there was just a little snippet in it that just seemed really off. I'm going to read it real quick so everyone can get reminded. Hammon impressed Portland officials and was generally liked among Blazer staffers, sources said. But when Portland reached out for intel from San Antonio figures, the background on Hammon was not nearly as complimentary pertaining to various aspects of day-to-day coaching responsibilities. That sentiment had been echoed by sources around the league. Blazers personnel then cast doubt that Hammon was a candidate to steer the ship through such delicate waters with Lillard. Mm-hmm. Let's kind of break that down. Noah, what's kind of your comment on this whole thing? Because I know that you posted something about what Pau Gasol had said about Becky Hammon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we can talk about that in a second, but to me it's just pretty much like a smear campaign on Becky to take attention off of themselves for hiring someone like Chauncey Billups. And I hear people make this argument that like, oh, well, people should be allowed to change. And, you know, everybody made mistakes when they're young. Like even Kendrick Perkins went on this like long tirade today on ESPN or whatever show he's on about how, you know, we have to give people a second chance. And everyone's always trying to tear down, you know, black men. And he tried to make it a race thing. And then he also brought up Jason Kidd, who's white. So, yeah, I mean, you already defeated that argument by bringing up Jason Kidd. And he's in this conversation, too, but not towards the Becky Hammon part. But I'll say this. Chauncey Billups should be allowed to grow as a person, right? He should be given a second chance. But I think that's only appropriate once you have paid the repercussions of your actions. And he didn't. There was no sort of like serious repercussions for his actions. There were no real consequences. He got to have a long career. He made millions of dollars. And, you know, last time I checked, there wasn't some sort of big apology on his behalf. And I know some people say, oh, well, cancel culture is bad and people are digging up old tweet. Well, there's a difference between digging up an old tweet where somebody said something offensive and then somebody who sexually assaulted a woman and then settled it out of court. That's a completely different thing. And so to me, yeah, I mean, go ahead, Nick, because I mean, that's pretty much all I have to say on this. Like, I just don't like it.
It's funny coming from Kendrick Perkins, who was charged with a Class A misdemeanor, I think, for punching a woman in the face in a nightclub. That is just hilarious. I don't know, man. I don't get it. Like, and that's the arguments that were thrown at me today about tearing down black men and stuff. Like, I get it. I understand that black men are, you know, falsely accused at such a high rate. But from what I've seen, is that him and I believe it was a teammate, right, that he did this with, or a peer, were basically like they could have had the book thrown at them and they just settled out of court for an apparently a huge sum of money. And I tell you, if I was so sure that I was innocent, I probably wouldn't settle out of court, because as we all know, that's generally a pretty bad look. So. Yeah, I'm so over this Chauncey Billups talk. Like,
and for just going back to this, to what this article said, saying that, how do you, first off, whenever you do make Becky Hammon one of your finalists, how do you not know that information? I feel like that if you knew that information and that Hammon was not as nearly complimentary pertaining to various aspects of day-to-day coaching responsibilities, I feel like you would know that before you make her a finalist. I feel like that. Yeah. I feel like you would know that info, and if
because it feels like you're using her, right?
Yeah,
it feels like you're using her at that point, like as some sort of PR stunt. Like, oh, we're the first team to ever bring in a woman for, you know, the final rounds of a head coaching job. Well, like you're right, Ty. Like, shouldn't they have known that beforehand? And Like, who did they get the intel from? Because I think you could have gotten the intel from anyone. There's bound to be someone in any organization who doesn't like one individual. Like, regardless of like, race or gender, there's always going to be somebody who doesn't like you within your organization. It's just not possible when you're that big of an organization and I have one person who doesn't like you. And, like, if you go off the record, you can say anything. So, I don't really buy into it. So, but anyways, you can continue.
To me, it's bullshit. I think it's complete bullshit.
And what I think we're going to... Oh, sorry. Ty, go ahead.
Because I was going to say, like I said... I feel like if you this information was such a turnoff for making her a head coach, you should have fucking known this before you made her a finalist and made it known to your sources, to your reporters that you are a source for.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm afraid 100%. That we're gonna see, we're gonna see this trend in the future with Becky, maybe with other female head coaches. I think we're gonna see some type of like Rooney Rule being used to the NBA for a PR stunt, except it's going to be based around gender. And this seems to be one of the first instances of it. You know, instead of it, you having to interview a black coach, you're interviewing a female coach. And they may not have to, but it looks like teams are going to try and pop themselves up in a PR stunt, say, oh, look, we're interviewing them. We're going to hire a former player with zero coaching experience in a checkered past. I don't know, man. Like,
I think once Becky or some other female, because I know that the Pelicans have a assistant coach that's coming up the ranks that could possibly take a head coaching job too there. Once there is a female head coach, I think the floodgates are going to open, and I think it's just going to become a normal thing where females are part of coaching staffs, and it's not going to be a major significant news thing. It's going to be part of everyday life, and that should be the goal. It's not trying to force. I don't think the league should try to force anything like that. It's not gone well in the NFL, but and I will say the league at least doesn't has an issue with race or anything like that when it comes to their coaches. It's just in terms of gender at the moment where it seems a little bit lackluster, but the league has made strides to forward that with the WNBA getting a lot more press coverage, a lot more media coverage in terms of that they're getting pushed out there and they are getting support. And now you're seeing a lot more female coaches within coaching staffs. And now you're seeing Becky Hammon get interviewed. But to use that as a fucking PR stunt? What the fuck?
I mean, they also interviewed another female head coach. They interviewed Dawn Staley, who's the head coach for the South Carolina Gamecocks women's program. So, like, I don't know. It kind of felt like they also brought her now, when you look at it from the outside after all this stuff, like they brought her in as well just to say, not only did we interview a woman in the finals, but we also had another woman in the running. You know, like it just is, it was really, really weird. And I would also say, like, not only does the NBA have like a gender problem in terms of wanting to allow females to have an opportunity to coach, but like also for a league that's primarily black, there's like almost no black head coaches. So like, I do think there's still like some issues there, but yeah, I think the NBA and I'm glad that they went with like the Black Lives Matter movement. They supported it and that they put stuff on the court and back of jerseys. But to me, that only really goes so far. And I think sometimes the NBA pretends to be more woke than it actually is.
Yeah.
But that's just my opinion.
Yeah. What's funny is, aren't three out of the four remaining coaches in the playoffs black?
Yeah.
Atlanta,
Nate McMillan,
and the Suns. The only white
Williams,
Bud,
Monty Williams, and Ty Lue. Yeah, you're right.
Like you think that? I don't know. I feel like you would follow trends. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, because race has always been seen as like a kind of like, you know, I don't want to get into it, but neither here nor there. Like you know where it's going. Whenever you're talking about race and when you're talking about especially black versus white in positions of power, especially in sports. I don't know. I feel like the natural progression would be for more female coaches to be hired. And I'm not saying that you should hire a female coach over a male, even if the male is more qualified. I'm just saying, like, don't use them for brownie points on Twitter.
Don't use them as props. Use them as props.
And that's clearly what's been happening, because they hire they interview these two female coaches and then go ahead and hire Chauncey Billups of all people. Like, it doesn't make sense.
And it's like, it's not that you should be favoring someone over someone. It's that give them a fucking equal chance. That's all that they want. But to only use them as a prop to get brownie points and then And especially, you were looking at, like, we talked about the Mavs in terms of that they hired, that they had a whole, they had a whole issue, a whole PR, like, failure in terms of how that organization was being ran. And then they hire a female GM. They put out efforts to really change the culture there. And then suddenly you go with Jason Kidd. Like, I'm not saying that they needed to hire Becky Hammon or anything like that, but you could have had some better, some better targets. And also, let's be honest, Jason Kidd is not a great head coach. Let's just say that. He is not a great head coach.
What's funny is that he's proven himself to be a pretty shit head coach, and he gets this chance. From what I've heard is that he's kind of the one that broke Giannis's jumper, which is just a travesty, or helped break it. He kind of held the hammer while someone else shattered it, you know? I don't know. But yeah, do y'all have anything else y'all want to say about this Becky situation?
And for the people saying that, oh, it could have been the Spurs trash talking them so they couldn't leave. That's not how the fucking Spurs work.
Yeah, I don't
find
see that
as complete bullshit. Just in terms of, like, that's not.
And if it was, like, I feel like they're gonna sniff that out pretty quickly.
Yeah,
they're gonna find someone, and you will see them gone from the organization. That just doesn't happen in the Spurs. From what we know, I mean, I don't care. Like, I don't work for the Spurs, but that just seems like you, unforgivable. Like, you, I don't see that happening. I don't see a freaking, like, part-time water boy that works like Pee-wee League games in AT&T Center or whatever saying that stuff, let alone someone in the front office or anything.
It's weird. It's a whole weird situation. And then add on this article from Bleacher Report. And it's clearly from other sources, so it's most likely a leak from somewhere. It's not. And knowing how tight-lipped Santonio is, that shit ain't getting out. We don't know what the fuck this team does in the offseason for a reason, because they are tight-lipped and they're not going to let things get out that easily. So it's there's a lot of weirdness around it. There's a lot of very sketchy suspect type shit going around, and it sucks that Becky Hammon is stuck in the middle of all this bullshit.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and read some of the comments if you guys have it in front of you. Just reading stuff. Dirty Hard Money. Yeah, I think we need to stop focusing on Billups and what he did. Focus on most likely scenario, what they didn't do, what they didn't want to hire a woman. Just kind of reset. Do you have the chat in front of you, Nick?
I just pulled it up. I don't have any of the new comments.
Pop, so Dirty Hard Money said, no, Pop has never stood in the way of someone being poached. He's never had.
Ever.
We saw it literally last night where he wasn't going to sub Will Hardy to go get a job with Udoka. That was not going to happen.
And I doubt he would stop it at Becky. If he didn't stop at Messina, like, I don't see him stopping at Becky. I feel like, I hope I'm saying his last name right. It might be Messina, I don't know. But, he felt like part of Pop. It felt like he was related to Pop the way that they look and talk to each other on the bench. So I don't see him stopping at Becky. Like, I don't see him jumping in and, like, sabotaging. Pop is many things, but a saboteur isn't one of them.
So, all right, you guys have any last words on this before we move on?
No.
I'm good.
All right, Jake the Snake actually brings up an interesting conversation for us. He says, I think last night showed us that John Collins is expendable when the Hawks use Okongwu. And Okongwu had a good night. I didn't watch too much of it. I was doing my own thing. But with the cap situation that the Hawks currently have going forward, with needing to max out Trae Young, going to keep our pieces, having Okongwu on the bench, what's our kind of, is anyone's thinking with the Hawks organization of what they might do with John Collins change since last night?
Can I just gloat for a second? Because I had like I had to delete my tweet because I was getting attacked so much. All I said was, Okongwu is the backup plan to Collins. And they said, no, he's the backup plan to Clint Capela. No. I got like attacked by like some big Hawks people. And I was like, okay, whatever. Funny that, I was exactly right, and that Okongwu basically takes Collins' place for way less money. And they're not the exact same player, but he takes his place. He's the one that picks up where he would leave off if someone else signed, when someone else signs Collins. So I feel a little bit vindicated by that. But yeah, I'm still on pay John Collins. I don't know about giving him a max. I'm still not like 100% against it, but I don't know if we'd have to offer a max. Maybe. I don't know. With so many teams in cap hell right now, I don't know many that would offer him the $28 million. And if we can get away with like 24, I'd do that.
Now, what's your thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, I've never really been big on John Collins. I know Tom Petrini wrote a really nice article about John Collins. He's probably like the biggest John Collins supporter I know. He watches a lot of basketball. I mean, he understands basketball. I'm not going to deny that, but there's a lot of things that you could write good about John Collins. And then there's a lot of things that you can take away from John Collins by removing him from Atlanta. Atlanta is one of the best spacing teams in the NBA. They have one of the best playmakers, shooters with the most gravity as a scorer and a driver in Trae Young. And San Antonio doesn't have that. San Antonio cannot provide that same sort of infrastructure. So I think if you're getting John Collins, I'm fine with that. $24 million, I'm fine with that. I just want Spurs fans, before he gets here, to just realize he probably will have a dip in productivity. He probably will have a dip in efficiency. And aside from that, like, if people keep saying like he's this great creator, he moves pretty well off ball. But he only scored 20% of his baskets unassisted last season. Like, everything was from another teammate. And he sets good screens and he rolls well. But I just don't really think that you're going to get, like, this primary number one option in John Collins. You're just going to get somebody who's a complimentary player. And I don't know how far that takes the Spurs. But if that's what they want to do, you got to take risks. Like, you're a team that's a small market. Players who are, you know, big time don't come available that often. So if they take a risk on him, I'm fine with that. But I think Spurs fans have to be more realistic pretty much with anyone who comes in the organization, not just Collins, but really everybody who sets foot into this organization.
How do you feel about, because I've been really shifting, and we've already talked about DeMar for KP and stuff like that or whatever. How do you feel about just like filling out the roster with our draft pick and then a couple one-year deals and then trying to swing hard next, because like next year's free agency is insane. How do you feel about that over anything?
I also would be fine with that. I just think, and we've talked about it a lot. I've talked on my podcast. We've talked about it. Like, until Pop is gone, and I'm not saying I want him gone, like, I don't think you know the direction of this team. So, you know, next year, if you do decide, you know, or this offseason, rather, I guess you decide you just get a few one-year options or maybe a two-year with, like, a second-year option, and you just fill out the roster with the draft picks, I'm really fine with that. I'm not really that worried about that. And, like, assuming next year there's this really great class, like, you may be able to chase after someone, but my concern is, like, that was what was said a few years ago with, like, the Giannis class, and then everybody pretty much, like, re-upped with their teams. But you never know. Like, you can't predict that sort of thing. So I'd be fine really either way. Honestly, at this point, I'm sort of just kind of, like, along for the ride and trying to enjoy what we can get out of the young guys that the Spurs have, and we'll see who they draft and we see who they can sign, because, you know, they're in an awkward position. But that doesn't mean, like, as fans or even as media members, like, you have to be miserable. Yeah. You don't have to be. You can be happy just sort of seeing what's going on.
So there was an article that came out today about the Warriors fiercely shopping Wiseman in the 7th pick. What do you think a package looks like around that? Because I want to buy Wiseman stock. Like, I still like Wiseman. I think that, again, like, the Warriors aren't a bad organization, but he went into a rough spot on a weird team that had weird chemistry issues, led by someone who probably has the highest usage rate of all time, or one of them, being buried behind a center who he's taller than and a lot worse than right now. So I'm still...
Yeah, I mean, I would be fine with it. I think last year Wiseman was 12 on my big board. I was pretty low on him compared to the consensus, or at least like the big national media big board consensus, because he's somebody who, he clearly has talent, he has mobility, but he's also super raw. Like, he played very unorthodox for a center in high school and wasn't particularly efficient. And then in college, he played like 3 games, and then that's all we got. And now he has to play NBA competition. So, yeah, I mean, like, he's going to be a gamble, but for somebody who's the second pick from a year ago, I don't think you can really go all that wrong trying to get him in the 7th pick. But, man, I don't know what a package looks like. That's really tough. Like, maybe, man, I don't know. Like, do you even have one in mind? I think so. And I wouldn't be keen on that, but it's not like a forever contract now, right? It's like 2 years left, something like that.
Like, I was thinking if DeMar would want to sign and trade, I feel like he would. I feel like he would compliment the Warriors. We've already been over this, but the Warriors really well. But, like, maybe sign and trade. DeMar 12 and another future first, or Lonnie or Wiggins Wiseman at 7. And that gives us Wiggins Wiseman and maybe Scotty Barnes out of it, which I think is a pretty good haul. And those pieces complement the Warriors really well. Or maybe we could throw Jakob in there because they'd be missing out on a pretty good center. Like they'd be missing out on some size. I don't know.
I just think if you trade for him and you get him... Go ahead, Ty.
I was going to say, a package with the Warriors, it would certainly try... The Warriors themselves would be trying to relieve themselves of that cap hell that they're stuck in. Like, I feel like that's a must.
Yeah, I feel like if you get, like, Wiseman and you're moving away from Jakob, then he's pretty much automatically your starting center. And to me, that signals you're not trying to win right now. And I think as long as Pop's here, they're going to try to win. So I don't know how that works out. But also, like, the 7th pick, I think Scotty Barnes would be a fantastic value there. But he's also a guy who, like, I think if you're thinking of trading up in a draft, and you pretty much need to know it's somebody who's going to be able to help you, not just, like, necessarily immediately, but, like, long-term, they're going to have some, like, significant value. And I think to a certain point, like, Scotty Barnes is almost like a poor man's Ben Simmons in terms of how he drives to the basket, gets people involved. He can shoot a little bit, but not really. Like, at this point, he doesn't. And I know people see, like, those workout videos. And I'll just say right now, like, everyone has workout videos before the draft happens. That's and everyone. Everybody looks better before the draft happens. So I don't really buy into it. But I like Keon. I mean, there's just so many guys. Like, I think the Spurs are in a perfect position at 12 where there's so much good talent that you almost can't go wrong. Like, at 12, you could potentially pick Josh Giddey, Franz Wagner, Moses Moody, James Booknight, Jaden Springer, Keon. I mean, there's just so many guys. And Kai, you know, Kai Jones, too, would also be in that mix. So it's like at 12, you might as well just play it safe there. And I know, like, you don't want to play it safe forever if you're the Spurs. But to me, you're almost like moving up 7, like, for what you're going to have to give up or even take back in return in terms of cap. It may not be worth it, but I mean, it could be. It could be in the long run. Maybe James Wiseman, you get the most out of him and he becomes something better. But and I'm not a huge guy on NBA comps, like, for players, but if you had to give a comp for Wiseman, he's, like, in terms of how his game and, like, how he approaches it and his style and, you know, his feel for the game at this point, he's more comparable to someone like Hassan Whiteside, who clearly has become almost useless in the NBA. And that's not a good thing. Like, that's not a good thing. You want more than that of the second pick. But maybe they get more out of him. Like, what could Hassan Whiteside could have become? Like, we could throw that out, you know, if he had been with a better organization. Who knows? So I wouldn't be opposed to it, but I think they'd have to think about it for a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's what – and I think someone brought up a great question in the chat, and I think it kind of really relates to this. Dari Hardman asked, do you think the Spurs development machine might be overrated? Is just kind of cruising on their history, and I think this really plays well in terms of if you do get Wiseman, I think your goal would be to further develop him, especially since he has so little experience in terms of professional play, only playing those 3 games in college and barely not even playing a full season this last season in Golden State. What do you guys think about that, starting with you, Nick?
Yeah, I wouldn't call the Spurs development machine overrated. I think if anything, it's still underrated because we're still being able to develop people like Lonnie, like Derek and DeJounte at 29. Lonnie was what, 18?
18, yeah.
I mean, Devin's like a lot of these guys had almost 0 minutes in their whole first season, sometimes their first and second season, like with Lonnie, and they're still looking like players who at least played decent, consistent minutes through their first 2 seasons. So the development is there. The system is there. I think it's being held back, if anything, by how rotations are employed. And we've been beating a dead horse with how weird rotations are for the team. I wouldn't call it overrated at all. I would call it it's being throttled right now by vets. And I think, you know, it could return to glory pretty soon if the people that we've been talking to, their reports are true about the team going almost strictly youth this season.
Yeah, if the cards are played right, you could see the development just kind of skyrocket. You still see the Spurs be able to develop undrafted talent.
That, right, is I guess maybe not the biggest, but like look at how big of a playmaking leap Lonnie took from his second season to his third, where the second he didn't even really play either. And all of a sudden, he's this, like, extremely strong playmaker and passer. Came out of almost nowhere. And I know he had some of the skills before, but, like, he looks like someone who played serious minutes throughout the start of his career with the way he's able to create shots, you know, pass the ball, playmake, like, set up guys for good shots. And, like, that's on the Spurs development team. And, of course, you know, he was working in the offseason with people like Drew Holiday and stuff who probably taught him a few things. But, like, our guys are developing without really playing. And when there's players from their draft class who are playing without developing, you know? So maybe I'm being a bit too protective and maybe a little biased, but I don't see it as necessarily overrated at all. No?
Yeah, I mean, I would not call it overrated. And I know I keep saying, like, I don't mean to be, like, bashing Spurs fans. I love Spurs fans.
How dare
you? I'm a Spurs fan to a certain extent, too. Like, but I look at this and I just think it's, like, funny. People are always hooked on this idea that, like, you get Tony at 28, you got Manu at 58, you got Kawhi at 15. And, like, Kawhi is sort of like a historical outlier. Work ethic is off the charts. He had all the physical attributes you wanted. We just weren't sure if he was going to develop as an offensive player. It worked out. But with, like, Tony and Manu, that was really before the whole league picked up on the sort of advent of international scouting. Like, now everybody's on that train. Everybody's looking overseas in college. They're looking in the G League now that players can skip college and go to the G League. So, you know, San Antonio is going to miss out on international guys because everybody is looking at those guys now. So if we're being realistic and we're looking at who they've got, like, we've got guys like Keldon. We have people who, like, DeJounte and Derek at 29. Most players drafted at 29 only ever become role players if you're lucky. These are three guys who are clearly at the very bare minimum starter level players. So if that's what they're doing with the developmental system, then that's excellent. That's literally better than most of the league. And I'm not being a homer in any way. Like, that is just better than what most teams do. There are some teams like the Kings or the Cavs or the Magic who draft consistently at the top of the draft. They're poor at identifying talent, work ethic, and they don't know how to bring along players. And so they're just stuck in purgatory, even though they should be getting good players.
And you know,
the Spurs are there picking late and they're fine.
And you see those players specifically get stuck in purgatory themselves. You look at Mo Bamba, Marvin Bagley. I think De'Aaron Fox is kind of stuck at this point. But, like, players of those, that top, like, five caliber getting stuck with these teams that just don't know how to utilize them, don't know how to develop them, it hurts their careers in the long run, too, and it sucks.
No, I have a question for you, actually.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Someone brought up, we've talked about Giles a little bit. We've talked about Bagley. I feel like I know where you're sitting on this, but how do you feel about Rashawn Holmes on a contract somewhere between 16 and 18 million a year?
I really liked Rashawn Holmes a year ago. Like, I was pretty public about liking him because I think he brings something to the team that they don't have in terms of a like a lob target. He's also a really good rim protector. He can play more than just drop coverage in certain situations, depending on the other team's personnel. But I think right now it doesn't make a lot of sense because you'll never, ever be able to play him alongside Jakob because they both cannot shoot. and so I don't know. I wouldn't bring him in unless you're maybe moving on from Jakob. But I do like him a lot. Like, I want to get that straight. I do
Jakob,
like him a lot.
And at that number.
Would I start him over Jakob?
I guess depending.
No, not necessarily because I think they're just so, like, redundant. I'd rather have someone who you can maybe bring you, like, a little bit of a different skill set. Like, and that's why I think I like Kai Jones so much at 12, not to keep going back to Kai Jones, but, like, someone who has the potential to at the very least be, like, a standstill three-point shooter who can be a rim protector to a certain extent but has the mobility to guard on the perimeter better than Jakob does, and then also someone who can be a lob catch target. So that's why I like him more than I like potentially adding Rashawn Holmes to this team. I see somebody in the comments asked about Bagley. I like him too. I'm pretty sure he's still under contract. I think that would be a fine, like, buy low swing, but because he has a different skill set than Jakob, obviously, and he can play a little bit of four and five, but even so, I don't know what it's going to take to get him. I don't know if the Kings are ready to give up on, what was he? He was the second pick, right? Like, he was before Luka and Aiden, or he was right after Aiden, rather. Yeah, so that's crazy. That's insane. But he's also been injured, so that's a little bit of a red flag. He's always been injured.
I think that you'll find out what the Kings future is with Bagley coming up, because he is coming up in the last season of his rookie contract. He should be. If they are going to extend him, it's going to happen this offseason. If not, mm-hmm. he's going to restricted free agency. So,
yeah. I have one more question for both of y'all about players. And Ty knows where I sit on this. Like, and I just have to ask you, and I hope you answer correctly. What do you feel about Jarrett Allen, especially whenever his asking price is looking at over $22 million a year, up to $25 million a year?
I really like Jared Allen. If I had to choose between Jared Allen and Jakob Poeltl, I would take Jared Allen every day. But the fact that Jared Allen would be asking that sort of, he would be commanding that sort of dollar, I wouldn't be interested. And I also, even if he was asking for less, like sort of in that Rashawn Holmes range, I wouldn't be interested because I think he does bring pretty much the same skill set as Rashawn Holmes. He's a little bit redundant to Jakob. So I think he's really good, but I think he's going to get overpaid. I think he's maybe a little bit overvalued at this moment, but I do think a lot of fans may underrate him, but at the same time, he's probably going to get overpaid. And that's a weird line to be sitting on, but that, I mean, that's basically my opinion on Jared Allen. I don't really think they need him.
I would agree with that. I agree in terms of that. He's redundant.
Yeah.
He's the price point's too high.
Whenever the money was going out, before the money went out, I was thinking, well, it'd be cool to get Jarrett Allen, right? Like, 13, 14 a year, like, that's fair for his skill set, what he brings. But, like, I saw an article, and I think this may have been a tweet from, maybe not Chris Haynes, maybe Zach Lowe or someone, where it said somewhere that the Cavs or someone maybe giving him up to $25 million a year. And I'm just like, I mean, sounds like a Cavs move. I wonder if I can find that real quick. Y'all keep talking. I'm going to see if I can find that real quick.
Yeah, the price.
Yeah, I mean, with Jared Allen, I think he's valuable, right? Like, Ty, you know he's got to have some value. I mean, he was good for the Nets. He looked really good with the Cavs, but still, I don't know. I wouldn't pay him that much. I see somebody asked about Christian Wood for the 12. Like, I don't think that would never happen. They value him too much for the 12th pick.
Yeah, look at this. So May 16, 2020, and this was on Cavaliers Nation, but it was pushed by Bleacher Report, a couple other places. Right here, NBA. So this is just from an NBA agent, but they seem pretty tapped in overall in the market. Well, said agents. NBA agent says Jarrett Allen could draw a contract around $25 million a year. I think anything over 16 is an overpay, and anything over 18 or 20 is a ridiculous, like, lose your front office job overpay, especially on a contract that's probably would be at least 3 or 4 years. I had a lot of people that I was talking and arguing with the past couple months about, like, they want Jared Allen. They said, give him 20, give him 25. I'm like, I wouldn't give DeMar 20, dude, like, or 25. I don't know about 20. But, like, y'all got to slow down. Jarrett Allen is not as good as y'all think, man. Keldon Johnson dropped 20 rebounds on him in a game. Like, y'all got to chill out a little bit.
And I'm trying to look at the numbers so I can compare him. And it's not like he does too much different than Jakob in terms of, like, per game he is scoring slightly more. He's getting slightly more rebounds, like maybe two more per game. And I know that makes a difference for sometimes. Like, he can bring you double-double on probably a nightly basis. He was averaging that with this season with like 12.8 points per game and 10 rebounds. Yeah. But I'm not
sure. That's not a bad team where a player that would command a 25 mil contract should be giving you at least, 18 and 13 at that number at least. Especially on a team without any other use of bigs.
But I don't see, he might bring you some more offense, he's not bringing the same defense that Jakob can do. And like Noah said, it's very redundant to have two of those guys on the roster, especially if you're paying him $13, $15 million more than Jakob Poeltl. You should be saving your money. Go with the price efficient version of what you want. And the difference is not too drastic between the two. Yeah, he can dunk and probably put more of a highlight show, but it's just not as like you do have an abundance of cap, but don't go wasting on redundant pieces. Don't go wasting on guys that are not going to fit your system or anything like that.
He's Dwayne Dedman without foul troubles in an afro. Like, that's how I see him. I'm just not a big Jared Allen fan, and that's hyperbole.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really want Jared Allen on our team. He's a good bench mob guy, but he's not as good as Drew. He's a good defensive guy. He's not as good of a defender as Yagub. He's a good rebounding guy, but you don't give someone $18 million a year for rebounding unless they're giving you like 20, 25 a game. He won't score that many points.
The thing with Jared Allen, though, I think is like he's still really young. You know, like he's only 22 years old, and I think he hasn't necessarily scratched the surface of what he can do. He's shown some shooting potential. Like he's willing to shoot the three when he's open, but he's not really knocking it down. But he's also not—he's not shooting a good percentage. I think career he's like 32 or 33. But if we're gonna make the argument he can't shoot, like Lucas Shamanich also shot like 29% from three. So I don't think percentages are necessarily always representative. But yeah, again, like I think the biggest point is he's just redundant on this roster. Can he be a better lob target than Jakob? Yeah, like 99% of NBA centers are. But that doesn't—I mean—that's not the end-all, be-all for NBA centers. And I don't—and I want to ask y'all a question, and I'll give you—you know—my opinion on it in a second. But I don't really think Jakob's a starting center in the NBA unless he's in the right situation. And clearly, San Antonio isn't winning, so that's not the right situation right now.
He would be the best backup center in the league, probably. But me, Ty and I have been talking about this for a while. Like, he should not be our long-term solution at center.
And there's a reason Spurs only signed him for 3 years, too, by the way, just as a reminder.
But with that being said, I don't want to take away from just how incredible he is defensively and how clutch he can be in some aspects and how good of a bridge he's been. Because if we didn't get him in that trade, man, like we may still be paying 75-year-old Pau Gasol to help our young guys. Like he's been good for us. He's produced more than we could have asked, especially in that trade, since he was just kind of tacked on. But like he shouldn't be starting a year or two from now for us. He should be an insane backup, though, and help Derek run that second unit. If Derek's a second unit, I don't know. It depends on who we draft, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I feel that way. Ty, do you feel the same way?
I still think that Yuck can be a starting center. He just is a lot more in terms of he's the defensive anchor. He does a lot more on offense than the stats than the box scores going to ever show. He does a lot more off-ball stuff. What was it? I want to say I forgot what the ranking was, but he was like one of the top screen assist guys in the league. And I think he does a lot more than the box score. And yeah, the lack of dunking early on in the season and kind of throughout the season was not a great look. Eventually, he started dunking again, and then the free throw issues came up, and then he kind of resolved. I think he's definitely can still grow. I'm not going to say that he's never going to be like an all NBA center. He's not going to be anything like that. He's never going to be one of the top centers in the league. I don't think that's. But
do you think he can start for a contending team? I think is the question.
I think so too. It the center position
in the right situation, yes. Though.
Like he could start.
It has to be the right situation. AD, like if you're with like a LeBron or Luka, sure.
He honestly could be starting that Nets team. And again, that's a situation thing. He could be starting with the Clippers. It's like there's some teams that he's not going to beat out guys like Ayton. But there are some teams that I think he can be pretty valuable in if he's utilized the proper way. Now,
is he a top 15 center?
I think he's close to it.
He's
maybe
close. He's close.
Probably somewhere between 14 and 17, right?
He's one of the
maybe somewhere around there.
If you're looking at like all 30 teams and their centers, Jakob is certainly in the top 15 part of like the better 15 half of the league, I would say, in my opinion. Just in terms of defense
Do you
anchor.
Think he should be the long-term center from our team? We're not talking about
long-term. I don't think long-term it's going to be. I don't think that's going to be right. It's just, again, they signed him for. He only has two more seasons left on his contract, and I think that kind of gave the Spurs some wiggle room in terms of see if he can develop his offensive game further. I would love. We saw a tape of this during his draft and occasionally in Toronto where he did take the three. Where he actually took some shots outside of the paint. I would like to see him. I'd like to see more of a green light for him on that part because I want to see what he can do. I would like to think he has a jump shot, but it's just we haven't seen. He has never been in the role or position to do that. So
yeah, I also feel like, and this may just be, I could be completely wrong. I want y'all to correct me if I am. I feel like DeMar never looked at him that often whenever it was DeMar's turn to playmate. And I could be wrong on that.
Like
I feel
Jakob?
Like, yeah.
Jakob?
Jakob. I could be wrong, but I feel Jakob and, like, Derek, Jakob and Lonnie had, like, really good connections that Jakobs didn't share with DeMar, who was our main playmaker for the better part of 2 years.
Yeah, I think you're right to like a certain extent. I also think Jakob is super limited as like a target for, I mean, because it's hard to get him the ball. You have to, there is no above the rim play for him as a lob target. That's just not going to happen. So everything's got to be bounce pass. Everything's got to be find a little opening to get him the ball. And then once he's near the rim, he's not much of a dunker unless he's like wide open and he has a lane to take off from. So he's going to throw up those little floaters, the pop shots. And I don't know, personally, I wouldn't really like, I don't care too much that DeMar didn't look at him that much, but it is a little strange that like, it seemed that DeJounte and Derek had a lot better chemistry with him. I did want to just address something in the comments about Şengün at 12. Every time I see that name, I will say no. I like him. I think he's really solid, but in the lottery, I don't think he makes sense. The more and more I watch of him, yeah, like anytime I see someone suggest Şengün at 12, I'm going to say no.
Go watch his defensive. Like
it's going to be really rough.
It is the worst.
Like to me, honestly, it's like to me, he's not even like he's. I don't even think he's like an awful defender. I think he's going to be like average, just at the peak average in the NBA there. But like, if you look at like the way the NBA is going, there's not a lot of like strictly post bigs anymore who are taken in the lottery, and there's a reason for that. Like, people say he can shoot. He can't. He didn't hardly shoot at all. There's a bunch of videos of him shooting. And again, that's what happens during draft season. So I hate to get, like, off course. But anytime I see the name Şengün, really like him, think he's worth a gamble, like, outside the lottery. But at 12, no. Like, if you're hoping for Sabonis, not only does he weigh less than Sabonis, he has a more slender frame than Sabonis. He's shorter than Sabonis. He's undersized for a center, so no. He's 18 years old. He has room to grow. That could be you could say the same thing for any 18-year-old.
Yeah.
I don't like that that like line of thinking that you're 18, therefore you have forever to grow. Like you could say the same thing about any 18-year-old. And I know he was dominant, like in the second best league in the world, probably, but that's still not the NBA.
Yeah, and
so
I would.
That's just my tangent. Oh man, yeah, and like I don't think he's awful. Like again, I'm not gonna say he's bad, but like he does to me doesn't make a lot of sense at 12. I think if you want to, if that's your dude, trade down because he'd be fine later. But in the lottery, there will be better options.
Am I the only one that gets pissed off now that like some mock drafts just kind of do the easy way out with picking Spurs and just say, yeah, let's go with one of the top like international picks just because that's. That's how the Spurs have done it, even though the Spurs have not fucking done that and for the past three seasons where they drafted DeJounte, Lonnie, Derek, Keldon. Yeah, they drafted Lucas Samanich at 19, but that was kind of a given. But it's like that's kind of not been the Spurs go to in the past five drafts.
And have we even we haven't drafted the European in the second round in a while either, right?
I don't think so.
No,
it's been like Weatherspoon, Metu, Blossom Game was before Metu, right?
Yeah. And I don't even know there was a second round pick with DeJounte, so. I just hate that. It's just a cop out for some of these mock drafts, and some of these guys just don't fucking make sense. But
I think because of like, I don't know, I could be wrong, but I feel like we're going to see an influx of overrated international players, especially with the success of people like Luka and Jokic and stuff like that. And in part due to the Spurs' due diligence, like picking, you know, earlier, especially international players. But I feel like seeing some of these players high, and I don't know a lot about them, but you see like Şengün, like they're getting just a little bit overrated because it's hard to identify the talent they're playing against and how that would translate to the NBA. Because I feel like it's a lot easier to translate basketball skills, like NCAA skills to the NBA and kind of project it. But in like overseas leagues, it can be a little tricky, especially because a lot of the times they're not playing against other people who are going into the draft. But in the NCAA, a lot of these kids are playing against each other. So you can kind of get a feel where they're going. Go ahead.
Oh no! I thought you were finished.
Yeah, I'm basically done.
So I do want to talk about I want to talk about Giddey with you, Noah, because Giddey's kind of like a weird prospect. At least I can't really make a determination about. Like, there's some things that I think would really work well with the Spurs team, and then there's other things like I feel like there's a bigger needs at a 4 or 5 position. I've looked at the tape, I've looked at his weakness and strengths, and I kind of my impression, but I want to see where you're at with him.
Yeah, I think if Giddy's there at 12, you have to take him. He's a better passer than anyone on the team right now. And yeah, like somebody said earlier, you know, someone's 18 and like you have to take that into account. Sure, if we want to do that, then Giddy is also 18, so he's hardly even really grown into his frame. He's still pretty slender. He finishes really well at the rim, actually, for someone who's so small, but I think his issue is getting there. He doesn't have very great athleticism. He's pretty limited there. As a shooter, he's not as bad as his percentages show. He was really bad. Like, he was so bad at the start of the year that by the time he started figuring things out, it was too late. Like, his percentage was, I think, ended up at 30% from three, but it was better over the second half of the season. And I think it's important to remember, like, he played in the same exact league where LaMelo Ball just came out of, where RJ Hampton just came out of, and he had a much better season than RJ Hampton did, and RJ Hampton looked pretty good during his rookie year. And I think Josh Giddey has more tangible skills. Like, he's not just an athlete. He's not just someone who can pull up. Like, he's got some things that are going to probably be an issue once he gets to the NBA, but I don't think he's a guy who you'd look at immediately and say, like, oh, well, it's just not going to work out.
Yeah.
He's never going to get better. Because all these guys are young. They have time to grow.
And one of the things I really like about Giddey is that basketball IQ. Dude is fucking brilliant in terms of basketball IQ. I was watching some breakdown tape, and dude knows his shit. He knows what he's talking about. And some of the ways that some of those passes he got off were just, like, how the fuck do you get that? And, like, my notes, like, again, he's probably one of the best passers in this class. And if you put him in, if you put him on this team, I think that he's definitely going to be a kind of a lead ball handler in terms of, at least with his second unit. I would think.
Yeah, he could be. And I think he has a tighter handle than people probably give him credit for too. And he's not as bad at defense as I think people are just assuming he is because he's so small. Like, he's a really good off-ball defender. He makes the right rotations. He knows where to be, but I think, like, man-to-man, he struggles because he's just so skinny. And apparently he's added, like, 20 pounds of muscle over the last year, which is incredible if that's true, but even then, he's still pretty skinny.
Yeah, so I want to say it was Olga Nyulik of ESPN Australia. He reported that Giddey added, like, 15 pounds to be up into 220 at a 6'8 frame, which, if that's the case, I honestly can't wait to see. And I think that he's going to be trying to play with the Boomers in Tokyo. So I would that's certainly going to be something that you want to watch. But like you were saying with his defense, his one-on-one defense isn't great. And he's just, because it is like you said, his frame, he's just a little bit slow with his athleticism. But his team defense, his help defense, it's solid stuff. And he does a really lot of good things off ball. So, like, one of the notes I put, he reminds me of Luka Doncic in terms of playmaking, just without the athleticism. I'm not comparing them the two, but I'm just kind of comparing that certain play style, I would say. No, tell me.
Yeah,
if I'm
I mean
wrong.
He's a good. I think he's a. Yeah, I think he's a good passer. I think, like, with Doncic, that the guy's generational, so it's hard to, like, really make a one-for-one comparison. But I think Giddey can, and, like, this is sort of a cop out, because Ben Simmons also plays for the Australian national team. But I think he's similar to Ben Simmons in that, like, yeah, he can make every pass in the book. He knows where his teammates are at all time. His vision is incredible. And the only problem is, you know, to maximize that skill, you got to be able to put pressure on the defense. And Ben Simmons doesn't really do that. You know, he can get to the rim occasionally, but he's uncomfortable shooting. And Giddey, while he, like, shot the ball in the NBA, players are never, ever, 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 ever going to follow him above the screen. They're always going to go under. They're going to let him shoot. It's going to be hard for him to get to the rim with better athletes defending him. And so I think you have to worry a little bit, like, how much can he maximize his passing and his playmaking, because people are going to take that away from him in certain aspects.
Yeah, his jump shot was a little stiff, at least in the tape. I'm not sure if that was from early in the season or later in the season. He's not going to have that time to... He's not going to have the closeouts the NBL had coming in the NBA. Those NBA closeouts are too quick for him to have such a stiff jump shot.
Yeah, I don't think players are even going to really close out on him very hard. Like, they're going to leave him open. He's not, at this point, he's not a good shooter. But It is what it is. I think you got to take him if he's there at 12. But there's also like a handful of guys who I'm like, you got to take him if they're there at 12, just because I think there is not really a lot of guys you can go wrong with at 12 for the Spurs.
I will say, at least with Giddey, at least he's taking the shots outside of the paint.
Yeah.
I that's what I at least like. It's, you might have been some comparison, but at least he has a little bit of a jump. He at least has a jump shot that he's willing to take. So
yeah, the only way you can mess up at 12 is Kispert, and I'll die on that hill.
Where do you think
yeah,
is?
Yeah, that'd be tough. That
Kispert at 17. Book it.
I think Kispert anywhere outside of like 16 or 17, or if you want to take him in the lottery and you already have the infrastructure of like a really good team and that's like the piece you're missing, like the guy who can sort of be like a Doug McDermott or a Duncan Robinson of sorts, like, then that's fine. But for the Spurs, it doesn't make sense. Like, the dude's already about to be 23. He doesn't have a ton of upside. He's a better defender than people give him credit for. He can actually operate in the pick and roll pretty well as a passer, but there's not a lot of upside there. You pretty much know what you're getting. And if your value at, you know, 12 is Doug McDermott, unless you're like the Suns or something, and obviously they're not in the lottery, but unless you're like the Suns and you need a shooter or something like that, then no, I don't think he makes sense.
And I don't think there's really a team in the lottery that can really take Kispert in that with their lottery pick. Maybe Golden State takes him at 14 after, because they say that they do have seven, they get someone that they need, or they trade for someone. Then they get Kispert as kind of like a contingency plan for Clay. I think that could be a way to go. Yeah. But I don't really see anyone else in the lottery really having that infrastructure, like you said, Noah, to really take them. Maybe New Orleans put a shooter around Zion, but even then, there's better players that will be available at that point.
Like New Orleans,
yeah, they've got to figure something out. Yeah,
yeah. Or they're gonna lose. I still think they're gonna lose Zion if he moved to Seattle or Vegas or something. Like, I don't see that organization hanging around much longer. They're just they've had it too good to be this down bad. Like, I just don't understand it.
It's when we if do we all agree that New Orleans could be a team that could be relocated at some point in time in, like, say the next 5 to 10 years? I think so. Especially if they lose.
Yeah,
Zion.
They've got terrible branding. They've got like two all-stars. It maybe even two like a superstar and like a fringe superstar, and like I don't think anybody cares about them.
And yeah,
and even with the hype that Zion gets, they can't even put a good enough team around him to make the playoffs. They missed the playoffs twice.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I understand the first season where it was kind of Zion was hurt for the first part, and then you had the bubble and everything. But this season, you had a chance to do it, and you fucked that up. I don't know how you do that. And honestly, if you put Zion in any other team, I think that team can be a borderline playoff team.
If you put Zion on any other team, even a bad team, they are a playoff team. Like, New Orleans is a perfect shitstorm of just, like, I don't know. If you put Zion...
It was weird.
...in place of anyone besides De'Aaron Fox on the Kings, they're a playoff team. Like, I don't get New Orleans, dude. I don't get it. You have one of the best... I think one of the best passes in the league in Lonzo. You have Brandon Ingram. Yeah. You have... Zion, like, you have everyone around you. Like, I just that team is like I think it's just an anomaly. Like, this year especially, it's just a weird anomaly of just like bad decisions, weird coaching, bad schemes, poor vision of like the franchise and how players should be utilized. It was so weird. Like, I don't, and they
didn't, yeah, even, I mean, who put Steven Adams there?
Yeah, that. No,
if you put Steven Adams and Eric Bledsoe, two guys who are like not shooters, especially like, okay, Bledsoe for a guard is a non-shooter. He can shoot a little bit, but like Steven Adams is basically only going to stand in the dunker spot. Like, it doesn't matter what you do with him. He's never ever. No one's gonna. Even if you put him on the three-point line, people are gonna crowd the paint because he can't shoot. Like, his only career three is like this jacked thing he threw from like three-quarter court. That's his only career three. So yeah, it was like the worst roster construction of all time. And I worry about that. And I talked to some people last year about it, and it didn't work out. Like, it was doomed to fail.
And the only reason they beat us in the first game was they had 21 more free throws than us. We lost by like two or three. Like, and you saw that as a trend. Like, that team was getting ridiculous amounts of free throws in close games. It was nuts. Like, they'd be up like four or five on a team but have 17 more free throws. And I don't know if you say that that's like shady reffing or what, but like that team was set up to succeed by the league, the refs, like by Adam Silver, by God himself. Like, like it just didn't happen. And it's just so strange, man. And I get the roster construction, like Steven Adams split, so that's like awful. And did they trade JJ Redick this season, right? Like in the middle of the season?
Yeah, they had to.
Yeah,
because Redick was like, yeah, y'all are down bad. Like, y'all are down cataclysmically. Like, I don't know. I can't help y'all. And then he went and played for the Mavericks in civilian clothes, basically, because he didn't do anything.
And then you add on what JJ said about that front office. David Griffin is just not a trustworthy guy.
Yeah. That's the one instance I wouldn't blame, like, a superstar like Zion force his way out. That's, like, that, and then, like, LeBron's first stint with Cleveland. Like, I just, you do you, King. Like, I'm behind you on that. You need to get in a better situation because, like, with some teams, like, Portland's starting to look like that, but, like, with the Spurs, with us and Kawhi, like, we didn't deserve that. You know, I mean, there are certain teams that do this. The Rockets didn't deserve it with Harden, I'll say that much. But, man, I mean, how do you lose Anthony Davis, win the lottery, and now you're about to lose Zion Williamson over the course of a couple years? It is astounding.
That's hard to fuck up. It really is. And I don't know what the direction is for that Pelicans team. We've seen it time and time again that nothing's really worked in New Orleans before. There's a reason they moved to Charlotte. There's a reason that they rebranded to the Pelicans. And I'm not sure what it is. I'm not sure if it's the ownership and their decision making, if it's who they pick to run the front office. David Griffin, I think, is an extremely overrated GM in my opinion. He got bailed out by having LeBron on that roster, and even then, my lord, how many times do they fucking change players in the middle of the season? What, I forgot which season it was that they traded nearly half the roster at the trade deadline. And
are you talking about in Cleveland?
Yeah, in Cleveland with David Griffin in charge.
It was the year that they had D Wade and then like George Hill and then like Isaiah Thomas, and like that was just the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life. Also, like I think it had to have been 2018 or 2019, right?
It's like because 17 or 18, it's one of the
two. That's the season before they drafted Colin Sexton, I think, because that's the season LeBron left. Like, they were just trying to keep LeBron.
Yeah, it was the last LeBron season.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, that Pelicans organization.
Yeah.
Should we just call them the Seattle Sonics at this point? Because that's going to happen.
Dude, I love seeing teams in our district, like, the downfall. Like, our district, our, you know what I'm talking
about. Division?
Division, yes.
Did you just call it a district?
Like, sorry, I was talking.
Yeah,
what's
all the same?
I was talking about high school sports earlier with my granddad. But yeah, our division, like, dude, I hope they all crash and burn. I don't give a shit. But like, it's like watching a plane crash. No, it's like watching a meteor hit an asteroid that crashed through a plane and landed on a preschool. Like, you're just like, it's just. It's like the most vulgar display of just awfulness and failure and like the most catastrophically weirdly just like you can't even describe it. Like, I don't know how that team doesn't make the playoffs. I don't know how that team is failing so hard with Zion Williamson, who is, as far as I'm concerned, besides maybe Giannis, probably the most humble and likable superstar in the league. And one of, like, he is an incredibly humble guy on the microphone. He's so easy to like. He seems like he's pretty easy to please. You know, he doesn't get out there and complain much. He hustles his butt off. He worked through an injury. He came back too early after that injury, didn't complain. And it sounds like his family is the one saying that they want him out there. It's not even him saying. So it's like, how do you screw that up with someone who seems like such an amazing person to coach and to employ to have as the face of your franchise? It's just insane. Like, I just don't get it.
Noah, do we need to give you, like, a microphone arm? Because I just see you holding that microphone. I feel like we got to get you, like, mic arm.
Dude, there's a microphone arm.
Like, my stand?
For, like, $12. And it's my metal microphone arm. And that thing is up the bomb.
Yeah, not to even, like, flex. literally right now, but this thing is low key kind of heavy, and I've been like, I've been trying to like lift weights and like get in better shape this year because I just was a like fat piece of shit during COVID, and like
lost that, a lot.
My arms like, being tired from lifting weights, plus like this mic. Like this has been a painful experience holding this holding this mic.
Like noticeably slimmer, so, man.
Yeah, I need to get like a thing. I appreciate it. I've been trying to run and like get in better shape, so I'm trying. Because I got up to like my highest weight ever at like 164. Oh man. Yeah, yeah, but I need y'all to recommend me like an arm. But also like I'm really small. Ty can tell you I'm like really, really short. Like I'm 5'6". So
yeah, but you are like
that's like sort of on the heavier end.
Like funny enough, the highest I weighed was about 2 months ago, and I've lost some since then because I had that really awful bulging disc back injury. I couldn't move. I went up to exactly 264, so I was 100 more than you.
Damn.
But I'm losing it. I'm getting it off. You can ask Ty about, like, we were watching the election together, and I was, like, laying down on my stomach on my bed for, like, 4 days. Just, dude. And that's what I did for, like, 2 months. I just couldn't move. Gained so much weight, dude. Like, damn. I gained, like, 35 pounds or something in 4 months.
Yeah, Nick was stuck for a while. Like, I was like, are you still at home? Like, and he's, yeah, I'm still doing. I was like, damn, it's been a while at this point. And you were just...
I could play video games for, like, 3 hours a day, maybe two, or like sit in my chair. It was like, I'm done. I have to lay down. That's what got me addicted to TikTok, because I was just on my stomach, like watching TikTok. And but I'm losing it. I'm getting back in shape, getting ready for the Spurs float party.
Yeah, you've got the gun show going. I saw you the other day. You had a gym pick. I don't know if everybody got to saw it, but yeah, the gun show is real over there.
Dude, yeah. Like, we got ready. We got the
Right,
we got finger guns, and then we got the gun. We're getting back in shape, babies.
I'm like
hot boy summer.
With over COVID, I gained a little bit of weight. I'm still a fairly slim guy, but I have like a stomach now, and
you
carry
weight like a pencil. Like you just don't see it.
I look like a pencil, but I once I lift up my shirt, it's not gonna look good. But I'm 155 at the moment, which is one of the most I've ever, the heaviest I've ever weighed, which is like.
You're also like 5'10".
I'm
5'10". Like 155
is super thin. I have a slim physique. So I have that glorious purpose, I guess. Yeah. But
no, actually, go ahead, Ty. Sorry.
So I was getting back into working out since everything's opening up. I bought a little membership to a basketball court that Noah goes to. I'm like, I'm fucking ready. I'm ready to get this. I'm ready to start. I'm ready to start fucking flaming it from deep now to play some basketball. And then, my back said, fuck you. So
yeah,
it's getting better. I think this week I'm going to give it a chance. I'm going to try it out. I'm going to shoot some hoops. And I think I'm going to give it a chance because I'm able to do a little bit more. I used to be able to not be able to sit in my chair that long. Like, if I was sitting in my chair for, like, the amount of time that we've been doing this, I would start feeling it in my back. I don't feel it right now, which is good.
Yeah.
But it's still a little bit – it's not perfect, but it's much better than it was, like, say, a month ago. So I'm hopefully going to get back out here. No one's going to kick my ass in basketball. I just know it. I'm out, back out of shape
for
as
sure.
It is.
He's going to destroy us, man. Hey, Noah.
No back or good back. Go for
it. Exactly. Do you guys think there is a like someone with all-star franchise player potential, max potential in that 12 range? And also, along with that, I don't think this goes hand in hand really, but what are your feelings on Jalen Johnson?
Yeah, sorry. I don't mean to like leave out of nowhere, so this is going to be my last question, and then I got to dip. But yeah, with like Jalen Johnson, I like him. I just don't know what to think of him. He's like sort of similar to James Wiseman from a year ago, where he like put up some really good numbers for a really good school, but then dropped out. And so we mostly know what we know about him from his high school tape. So he has some playmaking potential. He could shoot a little bit. He's got good size. He's got some defensive versatility, but like I didn't see it that much because I didn't really get to watch very much Duke even when he was there. So I don't know what to think of him. And then in terms of like guys at the 12 range, probably not. like most years is the answer is no, and I think also this year is probably no, but that doesn't mean there isn't like an all-star maybe in there. Like,
yeah.
I think if you're looking at maybe the best player who you could take who might be an all-star one day, I really like Josh Giddey. I'm super high on Josh Giddey. I think Kai Jones is another guy who, like, if he reaches the ceiling, yes, but besides that, no, you're probably just getting like serviceable starters and role players.
What do you think? Garuba's
another guy. I like him, but okay. Yeah. So for Garuba, I think like it's funny because like the only pro comparison I've ever seen for him is Draymond Green, and I think it's like fairly accurate. He's an amazing defender, like someone who to me could be the best defender in this class. He could probably compete for a Defensive Player of the Year award just with his versatility alone. But on the offensive end, there's a lot of questions. Like, he's an excellent short roll passer, sort of like Draymond has become with Golden State over the years. But he just can't shoot. He can't shoot. He can't knock down free throws, really. He can dribble a little bit, but I wouldn't trust him to dribble in the NBA. So I don't know. Like, maybe if everything works out and he's in a situation where he can be, like, the third best guy on a championship team and therefore get the all-star nod because they're so good, they have so many wins, but otherwise, probably not. But I like Garuba at 12, too. I just, you know, it's going to be hard for them to screw up the 12th pick.
Yeah. So.
Well, Noah, thanks for coming on, dude.
Yeah, Noah, where can they find all your lovely information, of course, for Pounding the Rock and also your new podcast?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at @N_Magaro. You can find my writing at Pounding the Rock, a new podcast, Alamo City Limits. We have 3 episodes came out. Spurs Nation helped me get to 3,800 streams during the first week, so y'all are amazing. And that's about it. Yeah, it was a really first debut week. And then obviously you can find me at the line, where we've got Nick, we've got Ty, we've got Mac, and myself. So yeah, thanks for having me. Sorry I have to dip out a little bit early, but I appreciate y'all letting me hop on with y'all.
He's going to have more cobbler. Yeah. He's not going to share.
Yeah.
I am. I'm not gonna lie, I probably am.
Nick, where can they find you and your new upcoming content?
Right now, I may have something to announce next podcast, but right now I'm just at @NICYARBRO, which is at Nick Yarbrough on Twitter. And then someday I may upload to my podcast. I have no idea. I've been having too much fun with this one.
Well, you're over here, so don't need too much. I'm doing all the work for you. I'm making life easy.
Exactly. So make that's
sure
all
go,
I like.
Make sure go so follow
yeah,
him.
Yeah, just at Nick Yarbrough on Twitter. That's all I've got. Right now.
And again, you can find me, find all my lovely content at @BTyJaeger. Make sure to follow At The Line on Twitter as well, At The Line Pod. Make sure to subscribe on YouTube, follow here on Twitch, and make sure to follow where you get your podcasts. For the condensed version of this episode and for the full stream, we can go to YouTube right after this. That's where I am going to be uploading it. But again, you can also find out all my articles and everything lovely at the Sports Zone itself as well. So for Nick Yarbrough, I'm Ty Jaeger, and for Noah McGregor George, we'll see you guys next time. Thanks, guys.
Nice.